Over the weekend, President Biden signed into law a bill that raises the nation's debt ceiling and avoids default. Raising the debt ceiling used to be a routine act of Congress, but this legislation signed by the president was the result of some contentious negotiations between Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. It aims to limit spending and reduce the deficit while raising the country's borrowing limit through 2025. The deal garnered bipartisan support and also some bipartisan criticism from members of each party in the House and Senate. We're checking in with members of both sides of Wisconsin's congressional delegation about their reasons behind their vote on the bill. Gwen Moore is a Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District, which covers parts of the Milwaukee metro region, and Rob Ferret spoke with her on Friday.
Can you start us off by telling us why you voted against this debt ceiling bill?
Well, let me just say this. I did not, first of all, appreciate being in a hostage situation. Very obviously, I wanted to pay our bills. I mean, I've voted numerous times without fanfare to raise the debt ceiling. Matter of fact, three times under President Trump. And so I didn't appreciate being held hostage to a vote. But had... And I wasn't sure that the Republicans, even after this brinksmanship, would be able to bring a majority to pass their own bill, which, in fact, they were not. More Democrats voted for this bill than Republicans did. I mean, that so much for governing when the party in charge can't scrounge up enough votes to pass its bill. That being said, clearly I didn't want the country to default. And if Hakeem Jeffries had come up and said, Gwen, you're the 218th vote, I need you, I would have done it. But since there were 314 votes, I didn't vote until there were more than 250 votes for yes. It was a good opportunity for me to weigh in about my number one objection to the process. You know, I'm so terrified that, you know, we've started negotiating with terrorists and we might have to continue doing so. This is clearly not regular order. Ordinary legislating, the appropriations committees get together, the budget committee sets targets, you fight, you wrangle, you vote. But here, everyone who voted for it and those who didn't had to make a decision about whether or not to weigh the equities of doing that. You're not going to find a single person, not McCarthy, not President Biden, not Hakeem Jeffries. You're not going to find a single person that says this was some kind of good bill. It's a compromise that was a result of hostage taking.
I think, Representative Moore, one of the arguments is, okay, our debt, our national debt's getting bigger. We've got high deficits year after year. The normal budget process, whatever that is these days, isn't bringing that down. The only leverage a party out of power has is the debt ceiling. This is the only way we're going to cut the deficit. What do you say to that?
Well, I can just say that that's insane, especially when you come to the bargaining table not in good faith. I mean, you're coming to the table and saying we can't take one thin dime away from the richest individuals and corporations. Mind you, mark my words, you know, that before the ink dries on this legislation, Republicans are going to be back trying to get $3.5 trillion in tax cuts to the wealthiest people renewed from this legislation. You know, so much for caring about the debt. And, you know, another one of their really red lines was the work requirement. Oh, we got to have these work requirements. Oh, we've got to fix TANF. And let me just tell you, it seems to me that they wanted the pound of flesh from poor people, low income, mostly Black and brown women, to force them into the workforce. Low wage workforce, they wanted that more than they wanted any savings. Let me just say to you, the plan and policy that they had for changing TANF and disrupting the state's interface with TANF recipients, fortunately, the White House pushed back on it. But let me tell you, it would have saved them $6 million over 10 years. which according to my calculation is something like a 0.000000019 you know, percentage against the $31 trillion debt. Not just hypocritical. But meanwhile, you know, their proposals, you know, literally take food out of the mouths of people. Now, if they were sincere about reducing the debt, they wouldn't come to the table saying, it's non-negotiable. Tax revenue, increasing revenue is not in the cards. Also, they wouldn't be coming to the table immediately taking billions, tens of billions of dollars out of the IRS when we know that there's a half trillion to $1 trillion a year that this country loses in taxes that are owed from people who game the system. And they can game the system because the IRS does not have the personnel and the sophistication to go through tax refunds of these complicated tax returns. And Republicans are helping the wealthiest corporations of people game the system by taking away. So you're not, you know, of course we have to deal with the deficit, but when we have to cut spending and we got to raise revenue, we have to do both those things.
Talking to Wisconsin Representative Gwen Moore about the debt ceiling vote last week, there was talk from some Democrats, Representative Moore, that President Biden shouldn't have negotiated. He should have found another way, including invoking a line in the 14th Amendment that is legally, nobody's quite sure if he'd have the authority to do this. Would you have liked to see in the White House pursue something like that instead of negotiating with House Republicans?
Well, just let me say this. You know, I did sign on to a letter with numbers of other Democrats asking him to explore that. You know, I take their rejection of that to heart. They say that that would have had us caught up in court. That would not have enabled us to meet the deadline of June 1st, June 5th, and June 8th, you know, a day imminent that we were going to definitely default. And maybe it's something that we should take up legislatively or legally to really see, because I don't ever want to be in this predicament again. I don't ever want, you know, one party or one house to be able to blackmail the entire country, put not just our country at risk, but the global economy in decline. I mean, had we defaulted on this, we would have seen people being unable to afford usury rates for mortgages. We would have seen not just Wall Street collapse, but people's 401ks collapse. And for Republicans have to have done this, you know, so that they can get, you know, a little bit over $1 billion in COVID money rescissions and to create and to pass, you know, vindictive legislation against poor women, old poor women, 50 to 54. I mean, women who at that age are arguably may not be able-bodied, because women who are in that age range and are able-bodied are actually working. Now, these people who are not working have multiple barriers and challenges, and it's a shame that we're forcing old women back into the workforce because, as many of the leaders said during our debate, they want to help small businesses, the kind of businesses that you know, have part-time work and minimum wage jobs and uncertain shifts. They want to force poor people to staff those businesses and to be just happy that they're getting some sort of aid. Else they'll just cut them off from food and Medicaid. Fortunately, the White House pushed back on enabling them to cut these women off of Medicaid.
Representative Moore, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Hey, and thanks for having me.
That was Wisconsin Democratic Congresswoman Gwen Moore from the state's 4th Congressional District. She spoke to Rob Ferret on Friday about why she voted against the bill to raise the debt ceiling, which was signed by President Biden over the weekend. Now, coming up, we'll talk to a member of Wisconsin's Republican delegation about why he voted in favor of the deal negotiated by Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. That's coming up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret, and the bill to raise the debt ceiling passed the House last week with votes from all of Wisconsin's Republican representative, with the exception of Tom Tiffany, who joined the state's two Democrats in voting against the bill. In the Senate, Republican Ron Johnson also voted against the bill last week, while Democrat Tammy Baldwin was in favor. We just heard from Democratic Representative Gwen Moore about why she opposed the legislation. Now let's hear from one of the Republicans who supported it. Brian Stile is a Republican U.S. representative for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, which goes from the Janesville area over to Racine, as well as Kenosha in southern Wisconsin. And Congressman Stile, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on.
Take us a little bit through your thoughts and why you ultimately decided to vote in favor of passing this debt ceiling deal.
This is a reasonable and sensible bill that takes us one step closer towards fiscal responsibility. It does some substantive things I think are important and a step in the right direction. It limits our spending in the future, in particular to 1% growth going forward, and claws us back to fiscal year 22 spending levels in everything except defense and veterans. That's a step in the right direction, saves taxpayers money. We also claw back unspent COVID funds, approaching $30 billion in money that we can bring back and avoid being wasted. Let's keep that for taxpayers. Let's save that and let's pay down the debt. It also has some pro-growth policies in that are really important. It has work requirements, for, in particular for able-bodied, childless adults aged 49 to 55, and cleans up a lot of the way that states were gaming the system. Helping people get back to work, we know, is a core aspect of helping people out of poverty. There's nothing more important than a job. This helps able-bodied, childless adults to do just that, to work 20 hours a week if they want to receive welfare or food benefits. The other thing it does is it grows the economy, and in particular, it does that through addressing the permitting reforms that are needed for large infrastructure projects. It doesn't lessen any of the environmental standards. We want to keep our environmental standards high. It just says your federal government needs to do this in a far more efficient way than they were before. And at the end of the day, Republicans and Democrats came together to get this bill across the line. I think if anything, it shows that even in a period of time of hyperpartisanship, in a period of time of divided government, we were actually successful at driving through a deal that's to the benefit of the American taxpayer.
Congressman Stile, some Democrats have accused Republicans of holding the country's financial well-being hostage in order to get what they wanted out of this debt ceiling bill in terms of spending and revenue. And how would you respond to that criticism?
Yeah, there's a lot of hyperbole that people want to throw around. But if we go back at the end of the day, it just took President Biden a darn long time to come to the negotiating table. You got to remember, about 100 days before this bill passed, Kevin McCarthy, Speaker of the House, and President Biden met. Then President Biden changed his tune, refused to meet with Republicans in the House of Representatives, kind of took a real dangerous and reckless position of my way or the highway, no negotiations. It was only as the X day approached that President Biden finally, after doing all sorts of travel to places like Delaware or Japan, changed his tune, came to the table, was willing to negotiate. And at the end of the day, we got a very reasonable and sensible bill that ultimately raised the debt ceiling, which was ultimately needed, but with some fiscal reforms. And that's why you saw a huge number of Democrats and Republicans vote for it. I would say it was pretty darn frustrating that President Biden took a position of no negotiations. That is dangerous and reckless in a period of time of divided government.
Congressman Brian Stile, our guest, joining us this afternoon. I want to ask why this is an aspect of our debt ceiling debates, which now have been pushed until 2025 as part of this agreement, and why this isn't part of the normal budgeting process and a budgeting negotiation as opposed to a debt ceiling debate.
Well, I think the answer to that is pretty straightforward. Unfortunately, so much of our spending is outside of our budget debate. We could just look at the President Biden's unilateral action to spend almost $600 billion by the stroke of a pen attempting to rewrite how student loans are paid for. That was well outside of the budgeting process. I have grave concerns over it. I actually think it's unconstitutional. It was costing taxpayers $5 billion a month every month. That was outside of the budgeting process. Why? because President Biden took a unilateral action on his own to roughly spend $600 billion. And so many of our spending that we see at the federal government is outside the annual budgeting process. And so therefore, other points in time are when these substantive and meaningful negotiations can occur. This is no way to run a railroad. I'd love to see the federal government sit down and rewrite the process as to how we spend, allocate, and manage taxpayer money. Until that piece occurs, unfortunately, we're left to this kind of odd process that we have, but at least we're using the process to make sure we're doing some what I think are pretty basic things, like clawing back COVID money now that the pandemic is ended.
Representative Stile, can the federal government get their spending under control as you see it without at least addressing the non-discretionary spending in the federal budget?
No, it's gonna take an adult conversation as it relates to non-discretionary. So that is about 3/4 of our entire budget is on the non-discretionary side, but a quarter of it's on discretionary and half of that's defense. That's kind of a weedy way of saying about 11% of our federal budget is non-defense, not discretionary, non-defense, non-veterans discretionary spending. This is why it's all the more important to have the difficult and adult conversation that the president was refusing to have. The easy path for a lot of politicians is to put your head in the sand. What I'd like to see is us have a far more above board adult conversation about how we protect key programs, in particular Social Security and Medicare, which without addressing will have pretty catastrophic cuts. It's all the more important to have that serious and adult conversation up front.
Lisa from Madison called in to ask about the recent tax cuts and the role that they've played in the debate over the federal revenue and federal spending, Congressman.
And so what she will see is kind of when she digs into the data that we are bringing in the highest percentage of GDP in tax revenue since World War II. Only two times in history have we been bringing in this much money. When you make the tax reforms that were made now approaching 5 years ago, what you did is you drove economic growth. Going into the pandemic in particular, we saw real wages rising. Inflation now is eating that away. But going into the pandemic, we're seeing real wages rising. And so total revenue coming into the federal government was increasing dramatically, not by raising rates, but by driving up the amount of income everyone was making. That was positive. Where the challenge is the federal government is spending the highest percentage of GDP it's spent in a long, long time. So Washington doesn't have the revenue problem. We're at some of the highest revenue numbers we've seen. What it has is a spending problem, and we have to address the spending side of the ledger.
Congressman Brian Stile, our guest, joining us this afternoon to take a look at the debt ceiling debate, negotiations, and the passage of the bill, which pushes the debt ceiling back now to the year 2025. And Congressman, did you understand that where your colleagues, Congressman Tom Tiffany and Senator Ron Johnson, were coming from in voting against this bill?
Everybody would like a better bill. It's not lost on me. I kind of ascribe to the Ronald Reagan adage of if you can get half a loaf, take half a loaf. I'd offer that this is if you can get a few slices of bread, take a few slices of bread. This does not get our entire fiscal house in order. Absolutely not. Our spending is so far out of control in Washington. It's going to take much more than this piece of legislation. That said, this legislation was the largest spending reduction in history, $1.5 trillion. This bill also had some very positive pro-growth policies like the environmental reforms we discussed or the work requirements that we discussed. And so in my view, is there more to be done? Absolutely. Is this a step in the right direction? Yes, it is. And when I get presented with an opportunity to take half the loaf or a few slices of bread, I'm going to take it.
Congressman Stile, what more can Republicans who can now control the House do in conjunction with Democrats in the Senate and this Democratic president before this session is done?
The most important thing that we have coming in front of us is the actual appropriations bills. So we've now set the top line spending number in all the key categories. That's really what a budget bill did. That's kind of what we just agreed to. Here's the top line number. Now, the Appropriations Committee needs to get to work to say, okay, knowing that, what are we going to spend on and what are we not going to spend on? How are we going to prioritize the federal budget? This is what families do in Wisconsin every single month. You sit down with your spouse, you say, here's what we got to spend on, and here's what we'd like to spend on. Let's start to make sure we cover rent and our mortgage. Let's sure we can cover our grocery bill. And then as we get further down the line, maybe let's set a little money aside to do a fishing trip to northern Wisconsin in late summer. Well, what we've seen at the federal government standpoint is they want to spend on everything. And instead of maybe a fishing trip to northern Wisconsin, they want to take a first-class vacation to Europe for summer. What I'm saying is our appropriations committee has got to get serious about what our priorities are. And now that we have a top-line number that actually restricts spending, we have a great opportunity to invest in the area, in the programs that are critical, and actually pull back on spending on programs that aren't delivering at the level people wish they were.
Representative Brian Steil, with the last minute we have left here, where does this debt ceiling deal leave House Speaker McCarthy with fellow Republicans and his power within the overall federal government going forward?
I think what we've shown time and again in just a few short months is that Republicans in the House of Representatives are united. We're able to deliver on key policy wins. And I think this shows the strength in the conservative movement across the board, but in particular in the House of Representatives. Again, this wasn't the end-all, be-all bill, but what it did was a step in the right direction. Everything in this bill was a win for conservatives and a win for taxpayers. And so at the end of the day, I think Speaker McCarthy is well-positioned to continue leading in the House.
Does that lead towards more bipartisan agreements in this session?
Well, the only bills that are going to get signed into law while we have divided government is going to require the signature of a Democratic president and passage to a Republican House. And so we have to make sure that we're having the tough conversations, we're negotiating, we're moving the country forward. And so I suspect you'll see additional nonpartisan bills getting across the line.
Hey, Congressman, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Brian Steil, Republican U.S. Representative for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, which goes from Janesville, in the Janesville area, over to Racine and Kenosha, with us today to share why he voted in favor of the bill signed by President Biden to raise the nation's debt ceiling.